Well, hello and welcome, everyone. This is episode 94 from the Veg Grow Podcast. And today's episode is called Tool Maintenance. And it is the 12th of December 2016. Let me just get my notes in a bit of a better organisation. Anyway, right. Coming up today, got a diary. There's actually not been many jobs that I've been doing, but you know, I've got a few things to talk about, including tool maintenance, which will blend nicely into the main subject. Then I'm going to talk about the recent bird flu thing that I put a post up on last week, and I'm going to just discuss that a bit more. I think I'm going to sneeze in a second, so let me just... That's better. Right, back. Sorry, yeah, everyone. Yeah, last week's podcast, that went on quite a long time, but I was quite happy with it, really. You know, length is getting good, sounds good, and what have you. Right, so let's get on with the diary. Now, Thursday evening, I popped down the allotment after work just quickly, just to have a wander around and see what I could gonna need to do at the weekend. I noticed some of the shallots have been picked out, so I popped those back in to get those growing. Saturday, this is at home, I started making a water butt stand to go into the greenhouse. More than that as I go through it, but I've started making it, so that's a good step towards the towards it. Then Sunday, I went down the allotment in the morning. I only spent about an hour down there, actually. It's just a lack of jobs, so and I had a few things to do over the weekend, so I wasn't able to do as much as I would like. But anyway, I went down the allotment. I'd done the normal weeding and wandering around and checking everything. And then decided it was time to tidy up the rhubarb because basically, I said last week, it's all died back. So cleared away all the bad leaves, gave it a bit of tidy up. And I'm going to have to give it a mulch of horse manure within the next week. I then went and done the same with the asparagus bed and just tidied that up and got that looking a lot better. Cleared away all the dead material, cut that off. Gave it a good de-weed, and then I planted a couple of the asparagus I had grown in pots at home. So that's planted up, and the asparagus in the pots didn't seem to do as well as the asparagus in the ground. So be as it may, I've planted those up. I think in this bed I've got about room for two more asparagus crowns. So we'll come to that as we go along. So, after this, I went home, and at home, there's not a huge amount to do. I'm saving some things for later on in the winter, and other things I'm just getting prepared, so keep me talking, what have you. But I decided it was time to really do some tool maintenance. So, I took my spade, my fork, my hoe and my soil rake and my pitchfork, as they're the five tools I use mostly. I've actually videoed this, but that video won't be out till next week. I started at first. I just examined each tool and made an assessment of what needed doing. So what I was looking for is, does it need cleaning? Well, all of them needed cleaning. Is there any sharp edges that need sanding down? Any nicks in the blade and stuff that's going to need grinding off? Is it too rusty? Is it loose? And so on and so on. So this examination was just to get me get my brain in gear, see what needed doing. After that, I cleaned with a wire brush or a sanding flat paddle on a drill. Just cleared all the dust or dirt off and sanded the rough edges down and all the rusty bits, if you like. And just got it. It's not going to be perfect by far. You know, it was just a quick yearly maintenance, and I try and do this every year. I've probably talked about it before, but it's quite important, I feel. So yeah, I sanded any rust in the shafts and tightened everything as needed. I then disinfected. I got some spray disinfected. I just sprayed onto each of the blades, or all the bits, and then let that dry. And once it was dry, any nicks in the blades or stuff I filed away, and just got it back to a nice straight edge. And then I sharpened the bladed tools on a bench grinder. So out of the list of tools I discussed, that's obviously the hoe that I sharpened, and the spade, because a spade is actually a blade. I've said this before, I know I have, but I will say it again, because it does make a hell of a difference. So yeah, I just sharpened that on an angle grinder, got the angle right, ran it over several times on a coarse one and coarse stone, and then went to a slightly less coarse stone just to buff it off. Brought it back to a nice sharp clean looking metal, and yeah, and that'll cut through the soil so much easier, and roots and things. So it makes life so much better. It's same with a hoe, you know, a sharp hoe really is so good. I then got some oil. This is just a can of maintenance spray, but you can use vegetable oil if you like, or anything really that's oil. And just sprayed it onto all the metal shafts and just gave it a good clean and protection with oil. I actually do this over while holding it over a bucket of sand that I keep in the shed. I'll come to this bucket of sand at the end. Again, I've discussed this before, but I'm reiterating it because it's so much, it does make a hell of a difference. After the oil on the metalwork, I've taken some boiled linseed oil, poured it onto an old rag, and then I've rubbed it into all the woodwork. So that's the shafts, the handles, and so on. And I try and get to penetrate the wood as much as possible. It might need several applications. I only done it, only needed the one application this time. And that not only makes the wood look really beautiful, if you like, it protects it. It softens wood so it lasts longer and doesn't go that horrible, brittle feeling that you get with wood when it's old and dry. And it also means that if you forget to pack them away or clean them properly, they're going to withstand it a bit better. So yeah, the bucket of sand, I said I'll come back to that. Basically, this bucket of sand, it's a bucket of sand and oil, and I keep it in the shed. I've got one down the allotment as well. I've just got to set it up properly. And what I do when I finish using it, I plunge it into the blade into the sand. The sand then basically wipes off all the mud and what have you. Sorry, I'm going to get a noise on there, so let's get rid of that. That sand, it acts like sandpaper and just clears away all this all the mud and stuff. And then the oil just adds oil onto the metalwork as well, so you're getting two levels of protection. You do that every time you use it. It really does make a difference, I find. It really does. So, and that saves time. So yeah, so that's the main tool maintenance. Secateurs and other tools, similar sort of principle, but you've got to go through it. I might do an entire show just on secateurs, I think, in the future. Okay, so last week I released two news articles onto the blog. The first one was on Tuesday, and that was about, I released that early on Tuesday because I felt it was quite important to get that information out there. And that was Defred released a, I said it was going to be a noise, released a guidance and what's the word I'm looking for? A prevention zone on birds due to bird flu. It caused a bit of upset with many people I saw online and on the radio, but basically it's not as bad as it first sounded. So I've done a bit of research, and the best explanation and advice I found came from Martinswood Farm. I'll add a link onto the blog. It's actually where I got my chickens from, so they really do know their stuff, and it gave, I just felt it gave the best and clearest advice that you could get. I'll go through a few points. Basically, bird flu at this moment is not in the UK, but is on the continent, including France. So it's not that far away. This strain is not harmful to humans, but could cause some large numbers of poultry to be culled if they catch it, which is not good. You know, or you might think the amount of chickens we eat, the turkey, coming up to Christmas in particular, turkeys, ducks, geese, that sort of thing. So we're trying to basically prevent this bird flu. Basically, the theory is that wild birds, such as pigeons, seagulls and crows, could fly, of course, they don't pay any attention to borders, they could fly across to France, pick up this disease, fly across to here, mingle with our birds, such as trying to get their bird food or anything, and this disease could be passed on to them, which is not what we want at all. This prevention zone applies to all poultry keepers, whether you've got one chicken or one bird or 1,000. So every poultry. And all poultry, that's chickens, duck, geese, quail, turkey, anything like that. So it's pretty substantial. It is compulsory as well. We all, if we keep, I've got obviously got two chickens, you hear me talk about them quite often. So we all have to adhere to these rules. So yeah, thinking that you've only got one or two is not, and it doesn't really matter, it's not true. I doubt very much to be able to check every single person or follow it up, you know, the amount that the time that would take. But I think to be responsible, we've got to consider this. I wouldn't want to get ill. Why would I want to let my birds get ill? Now, the prevention zone states keeping them indoors. Indoors is in brackets. So it's phrased indoors, but it basically means separate from wild birds. So in my case, mine are in a run all day long when I'm at work. So I can't let them out in the evening. And that's all at the weekends when I'm around, which I feel really awful do. And they don't like it. I know they don't, because they're noisy. When they see me, they want to come out. They're a lot noisier than they normally are. So yeah, it's not a brilliant outcome. However, they'll soon get used to it. And it's only, well, at the moment, it's 30 days. The only change I have done is I've put a tarp over the caged run. So that's got a bit more water protection. And should a bird flying overhead poop, it's not going to land inside their run. It's going to give them a bit of protection. So that's the advice that I've read that I've had to take. Keeping the coop in one location, well, I'm pretty much doing it anyway. Hens will be grumpy, but we'll get used to it. Mine definitely are, as I said just now. And obviously the next thing to really consider is good housekeeping, you know, keeping your runs and hens clean as possible, like normal. Being confined, it's probably going to be harder or worse. They're going to make more mess. They're going to be stressed. So, yeah, it's good housekeeping. And keeping an eye on the health of the birds. So checking they're not looking ill or anything. There's many signs, which if you look on the link on the blog for it, it'll give you some of the signs to look out for. There's quite a few listed, actually, and I'll be here for ages discussing the signs. But if you're in doubt, just contact your vet. Don't take it down to the vet. I think that would be advisable. Just ring the vet and see what they say. And if they tell you to take the vet in, the bird in, then that's down to them. At the moment, there's no movement controls, so moving birds is absolutely fine. But that may change. But I still think, in my opinion, if I was worried, I'd just ring the vet. And if they say to bring her in, then I'll bring her in. Now, if you're selling eggs or the birds under the free range labelled, they can still be labelled as free range, even though you're confining them. I know, it sounds a bit diabolical, but obviously I think that's to placate the people who do free range, and my hat's off to them. I think that's absolutely the right thing to do. But at this point, when it's talking about illnesses, yeah, you need to really, you need to think about whether or not, about the health of a bird, and that's more important. As any free ranger will tell you, the birds are healthier by being free ranged, but of course you don't want them to get ill. But I also think, for me, this is the whole thing with the label of free range. Many people's impression of free range is just birds and or animals running around the fields without any real enclosure. Well, the legal definition for free range chickens is 1 meter square of space per bird, so yeah, it's not quite fits people what I imagine is free range until I researched it. I'll add a link for the DEFRA DEFRA press release about this onto the website as well, so be a bit more informative for you, straight to the source. Right, my second news article I released last week, I've done this on Friday, was Grow Your Own Prosecco. It was a bit of somebody had obviously done a report on something these people were trying to sell. Ready article. I'm not much of a wine or Prosecco drinker, but I do grow grapes. And I was just intrigued by this article. It said basically this company sells this Grow Your Own Prosecco kit, which is basically a grapevine, and with all the fermentation jars and equipment to harvest the grapes and turn it into Prosecco. I thought, I'm all for these novelty ideas, because if it gets somebody growing just something, then I'm all for it. So it wasn't, overall, I didn't think it was a bad price for everything you get in a kit. Excuse me. But my biggest kind of concern was, it sounded fantastic, a £33, I think it was, for this kit. And people buy it and they'll try and grow your own Prosecco, but it's going to take a lot of work to get a grapevine to grow. I wouldn't say a lot of work, but it's going to take work and to keep it producing. And it'll probably be 2 or 3 years before it starts getting the grapes worth making Prosecco into. So it's a long-term project for anybody, which I felt would put a lot of people off. Or they would buy it, expect it in the first year, and result in nothing, and then say it was no good. I think, Like so many things, it's about knowledge, research, and being aware, consumer awareness. However, it's a great idea, and like the funky veg I spoke about last week, if it gets more people growing something, I'm all for it. I did think this would make a great Xmas present, so that would have gone last week as well, which is why I released it. It kind of fitted. Okay, so I'm going to close up now. I'm nearly at 21 minutes. So thank you for listening. There will be a recipe this week. Last week I done the stock, which is one I keep. I'm making several recipes up that can be done at any time of year, just to release when I'm a bit unsure. I'm still experimenting with the yakons, and that didn't quite work, so I'm trying to get a recipe for that. So if I can get the yakon done tomorrow, and it works, that'll be this week's recipe. Failing that, I'm not sure what it'll be, but keep an eye on the blog for that. There'll be a video later this week, which just tied in the rhubarb and asparagus bed. Show you what I done there. I did video the tool maintenance, but when the two were together, that was nearly 40 minutes. So I thought we'll save the tool maintenance for next week, and I'll get it edited and ready to go for next week. Next week, don't know what I'm going to discuss yet. It'll be out on a Monday, and Tuesday I'm recording the following week and the week afters, and they'll be released as and when. So yeah, I'll be thinking about that over the next week, what to talk about. Okay, so thank you very much for listening. If you found this podcast informative or you liked it, let me know in the comments. Love to hear from you, as always. If you've got anything to add and you want to come on the show, get in touch. We can do a Skype interview. If you want to support us, don't forget the Amazon link on the bottom of every page on the website. Really grateful if you can do that. Really am. Anything that I earn from it gets reinvested with either new equipment and programs and stuff, and discussions with certain suppliers. So thank you for listening, and I'll speak to you all again next week. And don't forget to keep an eye out for the video and all the other things. Okay, so thank you, and I'll see you again.